because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damn. Right to self-defense. They say you're stable, but they don't make sense. Dangerous money will not turn into guns. All the food you know is asking for. All you buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when you'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free.
Broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. That is, of course, if you're listening live. If you're hearing the rebroadcast, I'm one of the many great stations that do that for me and for you. Or if you're listening to the podcast just for your benefit, so you know the time of the live broadcast, it is September 10th, 2019, and it's just a few brief moments after 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, naturally, that means it's Tuesday, and the Tuesday show is about an hour-long program. It was an additional hour thrown in to make sure that we get enough original programming so you don't have to hear the same thing replayed through the week, and so there's still unique and individual content for the weekends for the radio stations that rebroadcast a show over the weekend. I chose the time of 8 p.m. Eastern because it specifically was right after a great little show that I had made a regular part of my Tuesday evenings, known as Infidels Are Watching. That show, of course, is part of the Global Patriot Radio Network. They are greatly involved with what transpires at Blog Talk Radio. They're a force for good. They're a force for the counter-jihad movement, and they're a force for educating the American people and anyone else who's willing to learn or listen, as far as that's concerned. It was a show that was hosted by Miss Kel Fritzie, until we learned of Kel's passing. So while Kel is no longer physically with us, she is certainly a spiritual presence in our lives right now. And I mention all of this to get to the point that a little while ago, the folks at Global Patriot Radio Network utilized her regular time slot to air a tribute show. A lot of folks were there. It was beautiful. It was a celebration, as it should be. It did leave me wanting to tear up a little bit on multiple occasions, and did make it kind of hard to come over here and do this one more time. As I mentioned already once before, I was invited to the Don Smith Show this past Saturday to spend a few minutes talking, and I will be doing a tribute to Kel as well come October. The first Sunday of the month, that'll be October 6th. I still haven't made official contacts yet because, honestly, I'm still kind of trying to push it away. Part of me doesn't want to face the fact that I'm not going to get to hear a brand new conversation with Kel. See, Chief just sneaked into the chat room. Chief was over there. He was one of the folks to call in before I had to leave to come over here to open up this show. Annie, the radio chick Eubellus, also called in just before that. And, of course, the host Call Me Mom was one of the last people that I heard before I had to sneak over here. And I certainly enjoyed it, and I think Kel would have enjoyed it. It was a celebration. There was a lot of moments that were hard to get through, but it was a celebration, and it was a good reminder because it really is a case where you get to see that somebody like Kel, who was so selfless, so focused on getting the message out and wanting to be involved, not for personal glory, not for riches, not for fame, but wanted to make sure that voices were heard and that information was shared. Behind the scenes production work, she set in and guest hosted for several folks, and just to hear the recounting of these stories and some of the folks from the English Defense League, like Jeff, for example, would have loved to have been able to get Tim Burton on, would have loved for that to have taken, but unfortunately, that's just not possible. He and Kel actually broadcast together for quite a while. One of the first times I got to be on the air with Kel, Tim was co-hosting, and Kel would keep running into the issue of trying to determine which Tim she was referring to when she'd start to ask a question. It was a lot of fun. And I could feel, I could almost feel Kel's presence. So, like I said, she may not be with us physically anymore, but she's definitely here with us in spirit, and she wants us to carry on. So that is what we will do. And we will do so with a song in our heart and a strong memory of exactly who Kel was. In the meanwhile, I am scheduled to be joined here in just a little bit by John Paul DeGazzi. I probably just butchered that. Usually prefers to go by JP. Now, he is the founder and president of Communio, which is a website that is dedicated primarily towards communications and marriage, but he's got quite the interesting background. He'll be joining us to talk about this new survey that was recently released from the Wall Street Journal and NBC News, where they basically did polling about the shifting positions of what traits Americans think are important in defining the character of our nation. Needless to say, as you move from the boomers down to the Gen Z folks, there's been a huge shift, and we'll be talking a little bit about that. Before we get any further with that, I'd also like to, as a matter of a programming note, like to let everybody know that tomorrow is, of course, the 18th. Can you believe it? 18th anniversary of the attacks on the Twin Towers that brought them down on September 11th. I am scheduled to try to get the reschedule on with Mr. Michael H. Brown. Basically, he was supposed to be with us last Friday, and there was a major snafu. And as it turns out, it actually wasn't on my end for a change. Usually, 9 times out of 10, it is. But in order to accommodate and not have to wait till it was too late to even have the discussion, we'll be having Michael Brown on very early. We will be on a few minutes after 7. I am scheduled, and I say this very tentatively, scheduled to be joined by Judge Jeanine Pirro. at about 7:30 p.m. We'll be talking about her new book, Radicals, Resistance, and Revenge. Now, I say that because, as you well know, Judge Jeanine is rather important, and she was scheduled to be with us before when her last book came out. And unfortunately, the time she was supposed to be on with me, she was contractually obligated to fill in for one of the regular opinion show folks through the week, and she was unable to meet the commitment. Therefore, we also were unable to get it rescheduled because she was only available for a short period of time. So, I've got my fingers crossed. Hopefully, we'll get to talk to Judge Jeanine this go-around. And then, of course, starting at the second hour, we'll be joined by Mr. Ron Edwards, as is pretty much the course, the par for the course kind of situation, as we look at Wednesdays. And, of course, we will be talking significantly, once Ron joins us, about September 11th and what it does mean, what it should mean, and, how so many of us seem to have forgotten what the long-term implications should be for America. So we'll be doing that. So, you know, fingers crossed. Hopefully Judge Jeanine will be here. Hopefully we can make everything work with Michael Bryant, especially since the whole Alien Fest Music Festivals was officially called off today. And that was part of the reason that Michael Brown was supposed to be joining us. But, you know, we'll hash all that tomorrow. So join me 7 p.m. Eastern if you want to be here live, or if you listen at KYAH, or if you listen at WCET, of course, respectively, Delta, Utah, and Columbia, South Carolina. If you listen on those, just be sure to tune in tomorrow morning. And again, if all goes as planned, you'll get to hear those conversations. Since I've babbled on for nearly 15 minutes, maybe I should try and sneak in at least one news story. What do you guys say? I kind of left it wide open. I knew I was going to be listening to the Kel Tribute Show, and I really didn't know what kind of shape I was going to be in when this started. But I actually feel kind of happy. I mean, it's heartbreaking, and it's very sad, but again, getting to hear all of those great stories, like I said, it was really a celebration, and, you know, I think that's exactly what Kel would like. So here we go. My mind keeps going back to Kel. I've really missed her. But anyway, something that happened this past Monday. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a lower court to revisit a 30-day jail sentence that was doled out to the man who attacked Senator Rand Paul. You guys remember that a little while back, 2017, if I remember correctly, actually fractured six of Rand Paul's ribs and has actually caused him some long-term health complications, according to sources. The Washington Post reported that the Sixth Circuit panel defied tradition and requested that the trial court re-sentence Rene Boucher, who attacked Paul from behind back in 2017, allegedly, I'm using air quotes, doesn't work so great for the radio, but just trust me, I'm doing it. Trust me. For allegedly over a disagreement about Paul's gardening habits. Well, lawn care was more like it as opposed to gardening, but anyway. According to documents filed with the trial court, the individual literally ran 60 yards at full speed towards Paul and launched himself at Paul's midsection from behind, tackling the center. The center. See, the description here sounds like a middle linebacker coming up against somebody, so I guess that's what I was thinking. You know, you get past the center, you got a straight shot at the quarterback. Kind of from behind, though. Anyway, tackling the senator from behind. Neighbors, of course, claimed that Boucher was angry that Paul had blown, quote, the leaves from his property over into Boucher's yard. The assault ended in ongoing – sure it ended. It ended in ongoing dispute over the senator's yard maintenance, which had been brewing for several years, at least according to the testimony from the accused. The accused also claimed that he had simply, quote, had enough. of Paul's lackadaisical lawn care. He denied having any political motivations for the attack. Why, you crazy senator, you, I don't care that you're a senator, you can't put your leaves in my yard. And I'm wondering how crowded our court system would be if everybody who'd had enough of poor lawn maintenance of their neighbors ended up tackling somebody with a 60-yard head start. Suddenly, I'm thinking about professional wrestling now. We've got Bill Goldberg kind of spears going on. I don't know. Anyway, at the time, if you'll recall, Paul was actually kind of hesitant to make a big deal out of the attack, trying to keep the whole incident kind of quiet and handle the subsequent arrest and the conviction with a measure of tact. You know, he's trying to not make a big deal, didn't want to go to the media. But after the accused received a mere 30 days in jail and a $10,000 fine for one count of attacking a sitting member of Congress, yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is indeed a criminal offense, and it is a federal one at that. But he received this 30 days in jail and the $10 fine in a plea deal. Well, at that point, prosecutors appealed the sentence, claiming it was simply too lenient to meet sentencing guidelines for the crimes of the accused. Now, you see, I would think that the assault charge would be enough. I don't know that you have to hit with the extra federal charge, but, you know, hit them with everything you got. And when we say mere, the $10,000 fine, that sounds like a lot to most people, but this guy's actually a doctor. And evidently fairly well off, so $10,000, once again, is no big deal to him. At any rate, the three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, in fact, did note that the guidelines for the crime in question call for 21 to 27 months for the federal crime of assaulting a member of Congress, and that Paul's injuries, including the 6 broken ribs, were serious. You know, it wasn't a case of I got a bruise or I got a little boo-boo. It was actually pretty serious injury. So anyway, prosecutors had asked for a 21-month sentence, which is the low end for the recommendations. Now, the trial court judge, a Clinton appointee, for those of you who keep score of such things, well, the trial judge defied sentencing guidelines because she, in fact, felt, you know, didn't go by the law, just felt that the accused was an asset to the community and that his status as an educated person, again, I remind you, he was a physician, just like Rand Paul, by the way, with 2 grown children doing very well. Well, all of that worked together to justify keeping him out of jail, even though the attack was both a federal crime and physically devastating to Paul. So the Sixth Circuit blasted her rationale as favoring the well-off, noting that to prioritize the defendant's education, professional success, and standing in the community gives a leg up to defendants who are already in a privileged position. All right, did you catch all that? The circuit court said that the Clinton appointee was giving privilege to the wealthy, something that is not supposed to be done by Democrats, something that cannot be accepted by the mindset of the Democrat. But that's actually what happened here. So at any rate, Rand Paul has continued to suffer as a result of the attack, which cracked 6 of his ribs, as I've mentioned several times now, and left him in serious chronic pain. Back in early August, Paul had to actually have surgery to remove part of his lung, which, by the way, was damaged in the attack. He spent most of the August congressional recess recovering from the procedure. Now, in addition to the criminal proceedings, Paul also sued the accused in civil court and was awarded at that point $58,000 to cover medical costs incurred as a result of the attack. So it's kind of wild to see how the whole judicial process itself, how the courts themselves work in kind of a checks and balances kind of fashion, isn't it? This one justice, this one judge, decided that she was going to pretty much ignore the fact that this individual had brutally, and I don't use that term lightly, I think it's pretty clear from the nature of the surgeries and the medical care that Paul has needed since then, brutally attacked this guy. He should spend more than 30 days in jail if it hadn't been a U.S. senator. If this had been some crackhead walking down the street but was minding his own business and was attacked like this, the accused should have spent more than 30 days in jail. This is a serious assault with life-altering repercussions. We really don't know how bad this is going to be. Of course, Chief in the chat room says, Clinton teams favoring the elite? Say it isn't. Well, actually, he says, say it ain't so. Agreed. Chief also said a little earlier, I'm so worried about neighbors attacking me over my lawn that I've hired a crew of illegal aliens to maintain it. Well, probably not a bad plan, Chief. At any rate, I can't help but wonder if Rand Paul wasn't a Republican, if he didn't have that R at the end of his name, if Rand Paul wasn't somebody who tends to stick a little closer to his principles than a lot of politicians, regardless of what letters at the end of his name, you know, he'll stand up and he'll filibuster against things that Republicans are trying to push if they're not particularly conservative or libertarian enough for him. Not to forget that Rand, of course, son of Ron, and Ron is one of the most famous libertarians in the country. But if that R wasn't at the end of Rand's name as he holds that Senate seat, I wonder if the Clinton-appointed judge would have been quite so forgiving. I have a hard time imagining that to be the case. Maybe it's just me. Like I said earlier, I had to use the air quotes when talking about alleged lawn care issues. I'm going to be a little provocative for a second. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to be journalistically irresponsible, but since I don't claim to be a journalist, it's okay. Bear with me. I don't really think it was about the lawn. But if it was, geez, oh, Louise, what the heck? I don't want to be treated by a doctor that can't manage to deal with his neighbor well enough that he's going to go ballistic over some leaves, for crying out loud. I have to say that I'm somewhat impressed that Rand Paul's actually out doing his own yard work. It's not like he has to. Sure, he lives in Kentucky, and sure, he's a senator, but seriously, what's going on? He's a senator, and he was a doctor before that. Does Rand Paul really need to do his own lawn work? If he is out there doing it, and here's something I haven't heard enough people talk about. If he is out here doing his own lawn work, but he's basically just raking the leaves, but he's taking every single leaf and putting it over in the neighbor's yard, what had the accused in this case done to Rand before to make him want to take all of his leaves and dump them over the neighbor's yard? Because that's not the kind of thing you just do. It just isn't. Rand Paul should be hiring teenagers in the neighborhood, illegals if that's all that's available, but teenagers in the neighborhood to go do this. He shouldn't be out doing it himself. But man, a 60-yard head start. I want to know where this guy actually got his medical degree from too, because it sounds like he probably did play some football when he was going to college. It really does. But hey, anyway, the point of the story here isn't what happened then. We've talked about that back then. The point is, a very unusual move for the appeals court to order the lower judge to re-sentence and to do so in more accordance with the guidelines. It sounds to me like the sounds a lot like the whole Paul team here has tried very hard not to be overly punitive. They only asked for the 21 months, which is the bare minimum in the guidelines. You know, they were okay with the fine that was placed. The only reason they went after him civilly was because of how ridiculous they felt this guy got away with something. So, of course, you know, he really should be paying for the medical bills. He assaulted him. When neighbors saw him, I still would love to get to the bottom of what really instigated this. I'm just having a hard time. There is way more going on there than just dumping some leaves over your neighbor's fence. A quick shout out to Vorpal Byte, who's joined us in the chat room. Hey, Vorp, glad to see you. Vorp was among the folks that were over at the tribute to Kel earlier, and it was fun. Actually, looks like Doc just joined us as well. Doc, good to see you in the chat room as well. I've come to that point in the show, however, where it is time to play the Edwards Notebook, and then we will do the songs and stories for Soldiers and Veterans Tip of the Day. And I would imagine not long after that, we'll be joined by tonight's guest. So if you guys will stay with me for just a few, I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Nicholas Soames, the grandson of World War II hero Sir Winston Churchill, recently said that Brexit is sending Great Britain into a free fall, but actually nothing could be further from the truth. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, Brexit has not been enacted and thus cannot affect Great Britain one way or another until it is enacted. The real problem is that those who support the national sovereignty destroying European Union are sending Great Britain into a free fall. When a nation such as Great Britain is tethered to a massive centralized government, it destroys that nation's sovereignty and eventually its economy, along with reducing the rights of its citizenry. If Great Britain is ever to be truly great again, she must follow through and give the people what they voted for and allow Brexit to occur. Then, after the short-term inconvenience of readjusting to be a sovereign nation again, Great Britain would experience more economic growth and be free to sign a landmark trade agreement that would boost both the United States and British economies and further reduce the impact of China. I'm Ron Edwards. Feel free to check out my new website, theronedwards.talkspot.com. That's theronedwards.talkspot.com. And we'll meet on another page from the Edwards Notebook.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
Dan Perkins here with your songs and stories for soldiers, veterans tip of the day. Did you know that perhaps as many as 50,000 disabled veterans have student loan debt? Are you one of them? Did you know that the president has issued an order not only to forgive the debt, but wants to make it easier and quicker and get it done now? So here's your veterans tip of the day. If you are disabled and you went to college, first of all, you are my hero. If you have been struggling with making the loan payments, you might be eligible to have your loans be forgiven, and there will be no federal income tax liability for the forgiven loan amounts. Contact your local VA center or go to va.gov for more information on how you can get this student loan paid in full. You had the courage to get an education. Paying off your loans is just another way for us to say thank you for your service. This has been Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for staying with us through that very brief break. I want to thank everybody who's hanging out with us in the chat room this evening. And it is my pleasure to welcome to the show Mr. John Paul DeGance. Prefers to be called JP, is my understanding. I hope that's correct. Mr. DeGance, thank you
that's
so
right.
much for joining this evening. And how are
you? Hey, Tim. Good, good. Thanks for having me on tonight.
All right. Well, Dang, all of a sudden I got a frog in my throat. Never good for when you're behind the microphone. Obviously, there was this really interesting survey that came out not too long ago from the Wall Street Journal and NBC News, and it kind of took a look at national character, what particular values that Americans think are important in defining it. And I don't think it's a huge surprise in the breakdowns, but it's important to actually note these things. And this is something that kind of falls in your wheelhouse based on your background. But before we get into talking about that poll, for the benefit of all the listeners, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and how it is that you are someone that would be very intimately qualified to discuss the topic.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Well, I'm the founder of an organization called Communio, and we're a nonprofit that serves churches. We consult with them using the best of big data tools, relationship ministry best practices to strengthen marriages in their congregations and help them reach out to their community and strengthen the marriages in their cities. And over the last several years, we've done a lot of our own research and also rolling up our sleeves, working with more than 400 churches in different cities. We drove down the divorce rate in Jacksonville, Florida by 24% over a three-year period. And so we found certain specific ways to really help churches serve marriages and families. And my own background, I had come into the marriage and family space actually by way of I describe myself as a recovering political hack working in the public policy world, and started to recognize that so much of what we complain about, the reason we throw our shoes at the television, so much of what's wrong with the country, really, it comes back to some pretty basic stuff. It really comes back to challenges in marriages, relationships, and families, and the collapse of faith practice. And if we got on a better footing there, we'd have a lot less concerns in a lot of other areas.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think that that's something that a lot of us have been trying to touch on, that the degradation of the family unit, the lack of strong father figures in a lot of homes, it has led to a lot of turmoil when young men don't have the ability to have a strong male role model. It's hard for them to learn how to become well-adjusted, well-controlled, and self-disciplined young men. And when young girls don't have a strong father figure in the home who are going to teach them what the respect should be from a man, as opposed to giving into the trends of the crowd, to have that level of self-respect and how you should be treated from a man. We have seen a lot of negative things happen to our society as a result of that. And simply strong marriages would go a long way towards correcting that. So you guys obviously have been working towards developing the kind of relationships and helping the churches in this particular case, which used to be the backbone of almost every community in this country, to be more effective at doing and fulfilling the role that the churches used to do. How would you say that your reception has been? You mentioned one particular instance where you've been extremely effective, but are you being welcomed by a larger number of groups with your work here in that direction, or do you face a lot of folks kind of pushing back, thinking that, you know what, we went this way for a reason kind of attitude?
No, there is a lot of receptivity. We just came out of a three-year testing phase. Sort of some of our board members are in energy, and they talk about it being sort of the wildcatting or experimental phase where we were just trying to figure out what worked, what didn't work. We paid a lot of dumb taxes, but we did find a variety of smart strategic interventions that produced a lot of lift. And we're sharing that story with churches around the country. And by and large, they're really interested in figuring out how to replicate it. We're starting work in replication in the largest city in Montana. We're getting to work very soon in a large city in the Mountain West. I'll be able to share later this year. And then we'll be getting going in West Texas and Midland and Odessa and Fort Worth with large citywide initiatives. So there's a lot a lot underway because of the interest from churches in seeing this work. You know, 80% of evangelical churches and 82% of Catholic parishes reported on a Barna study that we funded early this year that they spend 0% of their money on strengthening marriages. And so churches aren't engaged in this area. Well, what stuck out to me, Tim, in the Wall Street Journal poll that I saw, which was really consistent with our own data, is you see millennials are very unlikely, the most unlikely to want to form a family, get married. Their faith is the least important to them of any prior generation. Patriotism is the least important to them of any generation. And we had partnered with a scholar from the University of Texas on a separate survey, and it was found in that Wall Street Journal poll. It's really consistent with some of the stuff that we found. We actually looked at how you view the free market, okay? And so you could agree with one of two statements, one of which on our survey was that the free market economy is a place where you can create, where value is created through the voluntary exchange of goods and services. It's sort of a very benign but somewhat positive view of the economy. And then the other perspective was, in a free enterprise system, the rich generally exploit the poor. And so the idea was, which of these two statements do you more strongly identify with? And what we found was fascinating, because we were able to do a cross-tab and look at how millennials and other generations viewed this based on their family structure, meaning what kind of home did you grow up in? You grew up in a home of constantly married parents. If your parents were constantly married, you're very likely to take the view that in a free market or in a free enterprise system, value is exchanged through the voluntary exchange of goods and services. But if you had another family structure, you know, whether you came from actually a divorced home or a never married home, you're more likely to view strongly the opinion that a free enterprise system, the rich exploit the poor. That coalesced really closely with, there's a lot of the data that those other forms of family structures are not as economically stable as a two-parent married family. There's and so kids in these homes lack the economic benefits that come from having two parents. And then it starts to bear out in how they view the world, how they view the free enterprise system. So then the Wall Street Journal published this poll that showed that, you know, guess what? It's not only that they that there's a distrust of the free enterprise system, there's actually even a broader view where that trickles into how they view their own love of country, patriotism, a variety of other areas. It makes sense that these things become less important when the fruits of an economic system are not as present in their lives.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it certainly does make sense, in so much as it's hard to be patriotic if you think a free market system is somehow inherently evil, because the United States is it is connected and it is intertwined with the free market economic system. There's no other system that has raised more people out of poverty. But that's not a fact that is freely shared and taught these days. So it's understanding that patriotism and that economic system divide would exist. And, of course, if you don't have that economic prowess that would be there as a result, it's also understandable that you may not be in any big hurry to have children. But I've also thought that maybe the family building for a lot of these young folks is a result not only – of the culture where not a lot of these kids have grown up in a traditional family unit, but also this overwhelming sense of political correctness where you're supposed to basically accept just about anything but that value. Would you say that there's maybe some fear among some of these younger guys, especially men, of the consequences of misinterpretations during relationships? Because the say, for example, the hashtag MeToo movement, something like that has caught up a lot of people that weren't really guilty of anything, but it still ruined lives. And a lot of folks have been very vocal about the fact that they don't care if it ruins somebody's life if it wasn't true, as long as they can still get at some people who are guilty. is that a factor that you've seen as well, or do you think it's still inherently more back to the socioeconomic side?
Well, one of the, I think the permutations of that question that's really relevant is we have in our country, especially in the kindergarten through 12th grade education areas, a really significant feminization of our education process, right? You don't have dodgeball is contact sports are discouraged. There's a lot of evidence that boys are generally dropping out of higher realms of education, right? We have today, there's about 38% more women who will graduate with a college degree. That's because less and less men are moving on. And that's the fruit or the bad fruit of an education system from the K through 12 area that's not treating boys very fairly. And boys are frequently treated like defective girls, and boys aren't thriving. And actually, ironically, women and men are both hurt from this because there's a huge gender imbalance that plays out in a big way in our colleges. When there's a lot of evidence when there's fewer and fewer men, okay, they know that the supply, a guy in college, in a normal college, knows there's a lot more women available than there are men for them. And so guys are more frequently setting the terms for relationship, and women are frequently the losers on that end, in the sense that both are losers in terms of both lose out. But men are more interested early. There's a lot of evidence, right? It's that men are more interested in sex early and often in a relationship, and before and without commitment. And because there's so few of them relative to the number of women in a college environment, there's a lot of evidence that shows that that's where things are skewing. And so there's less marriageable men, less marriage occurs, family formation falls, and the country's weaker. Men lose out because men who end up getting married earn more. The kids who are raising those families do better. So across the board, it's not a good thing for the country.
Yeah, it really does just show a divide that is a natural occurrence, I think, a result of this lack of faith. It really plays into a large part, and a lack of a patriotism. It's hard to really feel like you should be overly involved, which is really kind of weird too, in so much of some of the other questions that this poll pointed out, because community involvement actually was relatively high amongst all three of the major age groups that were divided up and looked at. And the Generation Z and the millennials actually posted a bit higher than the boomers did in this case, but the Gen Xers were a little bit higher there too. Community involvement, I think, means something different to these younger folks than what it did. They don't seem to have that same drive. But one of the things that I did think was really, really still promising, though, is there's an extremely high value still placed on hard work. Everyone's idea of what constitutes that hard work, I think, might be a little different, but still a high percentage of folks put a great value there. I think, however, part of that is also kind of showing itself in the form of putting the work ahead of family, ahead of your belief system.
Yeah.
And in that process, it's actually become an obstacle to patriotism and towards belief in God and of course in having children.
Yeah, what you're hitting in on is a fundamental shift in how we view marriage. Still over 70% of millennials plan to get married if they're not married. Marriage is still popular in some. It's least popular, less popular than it's ever been, but it's still pretty popular. But now millennials are viewing. We used to think of Gen Xers and certainly boomers would view marriage as cornerstone, sort of that key relationship, that key social institution that was the cornerstone to a healthy life and building a healthy life. It's now frequently seen as capstone. Okay, so what you avail yourself of after you've arrived. Frequently parents say things like, well, wait till you're older. Wait till you've seen the world. Wait till you have all these things. What that does is it frequently communicates that these other things, these other, you know, career, these other experiences, these other tangible objects are actually more important than marriage and family. And so that, you know, that's certainly something that plays out. But without a doubt, this is an area of where the church can actually add a lot of value. There's a lot of nihilism in relationships right now. We can churches can lean in and help a couple struggling do better. They can actually do a lot better. We can do a lot better in terms of stepping in and helping singles. We just did this work with the largest evangelical church in the state of Pennsylvania, and they found that they ran an assessment where 1,700 singles told the church that, you know, two-thirds out of the 1,700 told them that they wanted help on how to form a healthy relationship and have healthy relationships. There's a desire for something more than what the culture is telling us and selling us, and I think that's where the church can speak counterculturally back into the world.
Well, again, though, there's a lot of churches that really seem to try to avoid what they see as the third rail of political correctness. They don't want to be on the wrong side, whether they are afraid that it's driving down attendance among the younger folks. If a church doesn't have a good youth program, the very future of that particular church is in jeopardy. I guess the question becomes, how does a church become more sensitive, I guess, to this particular need?
Yeah.
Because there's no question, there's absolutely no question that a lot of people are searching to find and fill that void. They recognize something's missing. They can't quite put their finger on what it is because they don't have the proper guidance to get them to understanding that. And that's where churches need to step up. And some churches are doing great, but a lot of churches aren't. What is the biggest obstacle there?
Yeah, when I sit down with pastors, I take a look at, you know, one of the key data points that we used from a survey that we recently funded was that actually, if you're a millennial, if you come from a home where mom and dad are married, you're 78% more likely to go to church every week than a millennial who's not from a home whose parents, biological parents, remain married. If you're a white millennial, you're 94% more likely to go to church every week. We're very concerned about religious non-affiliation. And we've talked a little bit in this conversation. What comes first? What's the chicken or the egg? Is it faith or is it family? There's a lot of social science that suggests, well, there is a double helix there. They both mutually reinforce each other. Family breakdown is the precursor to faith breakdown. You had a huge spike in fatherlessness starting around 1960, and it grew. And you don't begin to see a significant statistical rise in religious non-affiliation until around 1980. That's when those kids were born into fatherless homes in 1960 began to come of age. There's a lot of really good data that shows that we're more likely to view. It's easier for us to realize that God is our Father if we've experienced the love of a father in our home, and if we've seen an absent father, a father who's abusive, then or never even knew of a father in any way. There is a barrier to seeing and understanding that God is our Father, and that's not just my messaging. That's actually Dr. Paul Vince, from an NYU professor, psychologist, former atheist, actually has a peer-reviewed thesis that argues that atheism is frequently grounded in a broken father relationship. And his book, Faith of the Fatherless, goes through a psychoanalysis of this. So this is, you know, when you talk to a pastor, help them understand, hey, are you concerned about, you know, the gospel? Are you concerned about conversion? Are you concerned about butts and seats? And you really need to be concerned about helping people have fulfilling, healthy relationships and helping them move toward marriage and living a healthy married life, because that's where, that's where the gospel most flourishes.
Yeah. I think it is also a much easier sell to an individual who's been raised in a secular environment. It's a much easier sell to believe in the miraculous and in miracles when you have a healthy relationship and you can actually experience love as it is intended to be, because that is part of understanding the greater mysteries of the universe, if you will. there is no force that can make you be more productive and more successful at things that you never imagined you would ever be capable of than for making the effort through love for someone else. So I think there's a lot of strength there. Do you think it's fair to have grouped Generation Z and the millennials together in this grouping? Because one of the things that I've seen, I have a lot of renewed faith in the future of the country based on, while Generation Z has some similar attitudes about a lot of things, they also seem way more resistant to political correctness. So I'm kind of hopeful that that resistance will lead to them reestablishing a certain level of what us old timers would have called common sense. Have you seen something similar? And do you...
I would certainly think they shouldn't be grouped entirely together. And you're right. I think they probably did that because Gen Z, as in terms of adults, are it's not a generation that's fully matured, in the sense that not all of Gen Z is above age 18 yet, and so it's getting there, but it's not there yet. So I think that's an unfair, certainly an unfair group. And I think there is going to be some level of blowback to the way millennials have lived, like there is an average. There's frequently reactions to prior generations, and you see that with Gen X vis-a-vis the boomers, and you see certainly millennials are frequently raised in boomer homes, and Gen Zs are frequently raised in Gen X homes. So there's just different cultural dynamics that are playing out there.
Well, at this point, I guess the real question is, what are you seeing as you're doing your work that brings you the most, I guess, positive feeling that we're going to be able to reverse this trend? Because I know you wouldn't be doing it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm incredibly hopeful, Tim. And one of the reasons is, look, family's in free fall, so obviously that's not something to be hopeful about. But when you look at it, church, one of the big reasons it's in free fall is the church is not on the playing field. Our churches minister to marriages like we live in a 1958 world, and we're no longer in a 1958 world. We don't, just 28% of churches have a substantive marriage ministry. Okay, as I noted, 80% of evangelical churches don't spend any money in that area. 82% of Catholic parishes. 94% of mainline churches. So what I see there is a massive opportunity. I'm sort of a half-glass full guy. If we could actually, over the next 5 to 10 years, close that gap significantly, where we make a big move and help churches really reorient their ministry expenditures into resourcing healthy relationships and marriages, you're going to see a ripple effect that pays dividends for generations. But right now we're misallocating capital as a church, as churches overall. 94% of churches report having ongoing youth ministry. 77% of them pay someone to run it. Our youth are falling away, but it's not because of bad youth ministry. It's because they're not being discipled by mom and dad. And there's too many kids are coming from broken homes and They're not seeing a father's love modeled in their life, an authentic manhood modeled in their life. And if the church really jumped in both feet into that space, you're going to see a significant movement. And as we start to share that story with pastors and churches, they get excited. They recognize this is a big area of opportunity. And there's a lot of ways this can look. That's why Communio exists. Anybody in your listeners can check us out. They can go to communio.org, C-O-M-M-U-N-I-O.org, and see how we work and serve churches. And if they want to connect us with their pastor, we're certainly more than happy to talk with them.
All right, JP, do you invite people to follow you on social media? If you do, please feel free to share that as well.
Oh, thank you. You can find us. Really, you can find us on Facebook. Communio is our page. Yeah, you can follow us there. That's probably the best way to do it on social media.
All right. Well, again, JP, I appreciate all the effort that you're putting in. I do think that if our republic as founded is going to be saved, it is going to require families to be rebuilt. And a big part of that is also following in with the church. I think the two are extremely difficult to separate if we want to be successful. But there is such a huge, huge hole missing in the lives of a lot of young people. And I think it does start with proper mentoring in the household. It's not toxic masculinity. It's traditional masculinity. And that is, I think, a big part of the equation. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. Certainly wish you a great deal of success. And hopefully we can have an opportunity to speak again.
Hey, thanks so much, Tim. So grateful that you can have me on.
You're very welcome. The honor was mine, sir. Thank you very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, J.P. DeGancy. So anyway, just a few minutes left. I see Chief and Vorpal Biter still here. Doc took off about as quick as he popped in. I see Duck and Dive was here for a brief moment or two. And a name I don't recognize was in here as well for a bit. So thanks to all those folks for being here. Again, if you're listening at the home broadcast platform of blogtalkradio.com, there is a link to Communio in the show description. Feel free to follow that if you would like. If you are not listening there, then by all means, please be sure to check it out. You can do a simple Google search, if nothing else. And, of course, you did mention they have a Facebook page. Quick reminder to everybody that does show up here for the live shows. Again, we will be doing a broadcast on September 11th. You know, usually I'm here on Wednesdays. We're going to be a little crowded, or at least I'm hoping we'll be a little crowded, because anyway, I have rescheduled Michael Brown. He'll be joining us right off the top of the show, about 5 minutes after we get started at 7 p.m. Eastern. Then I am scheduled to be joined by Judge Jeanine Pirro. Previously, when the judge was scheduled to join us, she ended up having a contractual obligation that popped up, and we weren't able to reschedule her, so hopefully we'll get her this time. And then in the second hour, we'll be joined by Ron Edwards, and we'll be talking a lot about the September 11th anniversary as we do that discussion. In the meanwhile, it is that point of the show where once again I say thank you to Chief and Vorpal Bite and to today's guest, and ask you to once again, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, and more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for me tonight, guys. I am out right after I say one last time, rest in peace, Kel Fritzy. We love you and miss you. And hope to see you guys tomorrow. I'm out. You're BB Gun, what the world
is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family. Using both hands.